A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Tammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Happy New Year, Arrow Squad. Hello, Cammy.
And hello to you too, Flash. We're sort of meeting in that middle over hiatus, the H word.
We are. And we're kind of probably surprising everybody right now because I don't think they expected an episode from us.
Yeah, it's a fun little post-New Year surprise for you. Something you may have already heard, actually.
Possibly, yeah. We're basically here just to kind of do a little intro to a multi-podcast crossover that we did before the holidays based on the first three episodes of the Crisis event.
Yeah, it was super exciting. We got to team up with pretty much all of the other super DC podcasters and chat about everything that's gone on so far in the first three installments. And of course, there's still two more to come. And for us, that's pretty important because one of those two is Arrow.
Yeah, exactly. So really all we're doing is just saying, hey, this is what this episode is going to be. You're going to listen to the multi-crossover podcast about the first three episodes. You'll hear us in there with some of our thoughts and stuff. But what's coming up for us, Cammy? Because like you just said, there's two more episodes coming. The group is again trying to get all the podcasts together to talk about the finale of The Crisis. And I'm pretty sure me and Cammy are going to do our best to be part of that again as well. So you will have that to look forward to, as long as we can get on there.
Yeah, and I think keeping with the spirit of the crossover, since even the Arrow episode will be a crossover event, maybe if you guys enjoy this crossover review, you'll want that for the Arrow episode as well. Just let us know.
Exactly. Now, Cammy, before we switch this over to the crossover podcast, I got two questions for you. Because during our big crossover podcast event, I mean, everybody, there's so many voices, there's so many hosts. We all don't get a real good in-depth chance, I guess, to express how we feel about everything. So I want one question I want to ask you. If you can give us kind of the Cole's notes, an overall feeling from an Arrow point of view, how did you feel about the first three episodes? What they did with Oliver, his story, what's going on with them?
I think they took us on a bit of a ride, and my feelings were pretty maybe bitter or cynical at first over how our Arrow characters were first portrayed in the first episode. But they brought me around in the end, and of course things are still on a bit of a cliffhanger. Is Oliver suddenly now a bad guy again for the seventh time or something across the series? Or is there something more to it? And what's really going on with the idea of a specter and everything that these heroes are now suddenly in addition to being a hero? I don't know. And there's kind of a lot of plot questions at this point, but yeah. My main focus is on the Arrow characters. And I think they've convinced me that they may do Oliver right in the next two episodes. Am I being too optimistic?
Well, I don't think so. I'm with you that I was feeling a little bit let down and a little bit upset with what they did with Oliver. I was unhappy. And you'll hear it in the big crossover event. Yeah, I was unhappy with them killing him off in the first episode and then him not even being part of the second episode. That, to me, was disrespectful. Really, he was just a dead body they dragged around and then he jumped out of the pit and that was it. Episode 3, I thought, was the best of the bunch. And I was surprised with what they did with him in the end. And you mentioned the Spectre, you know, there's that whole argument is, did he become the Spectre or is the Spectre going to help him out? And it sure looks like if you look at the poster that they just released, it looks like he does become the Spectre. And I thought, man, they did not express or explain that very well at all, because unless you are a true diehard comic book fan, you're not going to know who Spectre is, what his abilities are, what his story is, and what he has to do at the Crisis event himself. So I think they really dropped the ball there in telling us what's going on. And so I hope that they pick that up in this comeback episode for Crisis. And then the other thing that I was thinking about is, if you think about Oliver, every single season, his opening monologue is, he tells a story and he says, I've had to become someone else, I've had to become something else. Well, how true does that play into this story now during Crisis? He is becoming something else by becoming the Spectre. That, once I realized that, I thought, oh, boy, they've been building up to this for a long, long time. And every single season, they let us know that he's going to become something else. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I like it. And I think one of the things you might hear on tonight's review is a lot of different perspectives on who Oliver is. And ultimately, one of the things that I know you and I agree on is that he's one of the most multidimensional characters. And I would go so far as to say all of the Arrow characters are maybe a bit more multidimensional than some of the characters from other shows. They've had more time to really explore them from a character-focused perspective, not just from, you know, a meta superhero focused perspective. And as such, making him just a paragon, say just a paragon of courage or just a paragon of love or fear or whatever, it would kind of reduce him a bit. And that's not to devalue the other heroes at all, but for him, he can't really be reduced to one trait. So I think giving him a role where A, he's somewhere in the gray area, and B, he is not just one trait, was worth the sacrifice of that role being, as you say, a bit obscure.
Yeah. 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 I think I agree with you. That's definitely a good way to put it. I think what they have to do is make him the ultimate hero. This story is supposed to be about him. This Crisis event is supposed to focus and circle around him because he is taking on the sacrifice that in the comics Flash and Supergirl do. They're the ones that sacrifice themselves and die to stop this whole thing. It's Oliver that's doing it in our TV version of it. So I want them to make sure his story ultimately shows him being the end-all, be-all hero of this entire event. I want that for Oliver because Arrow is coming to an end. We've had 8 seasons of him. He's got to end with that. That's got to be the sunset, riding off in the sunset for me, is that he truly saves the day and becomes the ultimate hero. Paragon, whatever you want to call it. That's what I want for him.
Yeah, well, we can cheers to that because Arrow will be returning and bringing Crisis back into existence for us next Tuesday. Is that right? The 14th?
Next Tuesday, I think it's Arrow and the Legends back to back on one night. So it's basically a 2-hour finale.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about it, and I will definitely be there watching.
Yes, and actually, speaking of watching, what I'm going to do, and I make as a recommendation to all of our listeners out there, I'm going to watch the first 3 episodes again this weekend so that I'm back in the fold of the story and everything that happened, and it's fresh in my mind, right in time for it to come back. So
it's a great idea.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is it for us. We are going to put this episode over into the full crossover podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoy that, and we'll talk to you next week. This is The Flash, signing off for now.
And this is Cammy. Enjoy.
We have all lost a great hero.
The wrong hero.
I do not disagree. You have suffered a horrible loss. But you have every reason not to lose hope. 7, in fact. Across space and time. Across space and time exist 7 heroes. Beings of the purest will who can ultimately... Beings of the purest will who can ultimately...
It's not working.
No?
Beings of the purest will who can ultimately defeat the Anti-Monitor and help save the multiverse. They are known as Paragons.
Paragons? And you're just dropping this on us now?
I only recently learned of their existence by consulting the Book of Destiny.
How? We destroyed it last year.
After Oliver's early demise, I went back into the time stream and retrieved it intact. It is now safely stored in this ship's library.
So it's what, Plan B? It's comforting.
Anyone else wishing they'd done that shot?
But wait, if the book can rewrite destiny, can it bring back Earth 38? Or any of the other Earths?
Trying to recreate an entire world would surely drive one to madness.
What about my dad? Could it bring him back?
I wish it could. While Oliver Queen was to die in this crisis, this is not how I saw events unfold. But as the Anti-Monitor gets stronger, I grow weaker. We must find all seven Paragons.
How about, like, a hint?
I have four. Kara Zor-El. Despite all you have endured, you are the Paragon of Hope.
Well, you might want to double-check your omnipotence, so I'm not feeling that hopeful right now.
Sarah Lance is the Paragon of Destiny.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Captain of time travel and all that.
I have only descriptions for the other two Paragons. One is of a second Kryptonian, who is said to have suffered a greater loss than most mortal men could endure. Today he stands as the Paragon of Truth.
I'll find him.
I'll go with you.
And the fourth?
The Paragon of Courage is known only as the Bat of the Future.
Seriously, where do you get these names and pseudonyms anyway?
I enlisted the assistance of Felicity Smoke, who earned the wisdom of a second book.
It's a lot of books.
The Tome of the Guardians. It revealed the names of Miss Zor-El and Miss Lance, as well as the other two.
Bummed out Kryptonian and Future Bat, which technically means...
Earth 99 exists in a future time, where Bruce Wayne has dedicated himself, body, and soul to fighting crime.
I'm sorry, go back. Bruce Wayne is the Dark Knight.
If we could all keep that to ourselves, that'd be great.
The path to find him will lead you to the Paragon of Courage.
Okay. Who wants to meet Batman?
In the beginning, there was one. It was the Arrow Squad. And then came the Flash. And Gotham. Didn't really talk about Gotham. But then came them. And then came Supergirl and Made of Steel. And then Legends of Tomorrow and Tomorrow's Legends. You had the Age of Heroes born. And as many of us as could possibly get our act together are here tonight. I am John, a.k.a. the Silver Vox, and I am one of the co-hosts of Made of Steel, a Supergirl podcast for the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network. You all have wandered in to our discussion of episodes 1-3 of Crisis on Infinite Earths. Let's go around the table and introduce ourselves. Go for it.
This is Martin the Flash. Hello, everybody.
This is Harley Quinn.
This is your eye in the sky, green butterfly.
This is X-Force 11.
And I'm Cammie and Ray.
And the Professor. I've been wandering around the underground for months. Hey, everybody.
Yeah, you were the one who opened this doggone door, right?
You're really Nash Wells. That's it. You're Pariah.
That's right. All right. So we have everybody represented. This is so cool. We have Arrow Squad here. We have Made of Steel here. We have Central City Underground. We have Gotham Undercover. We have Tomorrow's Legends. We've got it all covered. So this is fantastic. And this is our kind of group breakdown of what we felt. And well, like, we've been waiting for this for so long and so long and so long. And it is finally here. And so we are going to break it down as much as we want to, and you all are welcome along for the ride. Here's the way this is going to go. I am going to try and lead us through different topics of conversation. What we're going to do with the feedback we've gotten, and thank you to all of our listeners who took the time and sent in feedback. We will get it addressed. However, we do need to say it is way, way, way too much to try and do along with this discussion tonight. And so Made of Steel is going to do its own take on the feedback that we received. And Arrow Squad's going to do the same thing. And so all of the feedback will be discussed in detail in length in both of those shows. So hang on and watch your feeds for those feedback episodes. But tonight it is just us, the assembled heroes, trying to break it all down. All right. So in the very beginning, we got the origin of the multiverse. So let me just ask, for any of you, I personally have not read the Crisis on Infinite Earth comics. So for any of you that have, thank you, X-Force. Thank you for that condemnation. For all of you, for any of you who have, what was your general take on how the producers of Crisis on Infinite Earth, what we saw, compared with what we got in the comics? Anybody?
I think for me, it was really cool to see how they did it, because we knew it was going to be different. Because with a comic, there's a ton of backstory you can tell throughout the years and how they addressed how the monitor worked throughout time and the anti-monitor worked through time. And you got to see heroes of different eras in play and how that they all worked with that. And so it was fun to look at things from a different perspective to say, okay, how are they going to do it within our multiverse? And I think it was good because they set it up that there was a single overarching creation and then things split out just like with the comic. So I liked that aspect of it. I'm interested to see how different people play different roles, because granted, this was a major comic event that involved everybody that was in the comic universe. Some of those people don't exist in ours. And so I think they're doing a fair job of trying to reshape it and remold it, have the same overarching idea, but yet keep it true to our universe.
Very good. Very good. Anybody else?
Well, I think right from the get-go, we knew it was going to be different because they already let us know that Oliver is going to die instead of Flash and Supergirl. So right away, that's right. Different from the comics. So you know, you knew we were going to get something different. That's the way these shows have always gone. The producers have all said that we're not going to copy the comics exactly because we don't want these stories on TV to be predictable. Yeah. And me and Jess were just talking about it, too, on our Legends show, that the you don't want to follow everything specifically. TV is a different media. They have to tell the stories differently than the way they're told in the comic books, because the comic books don't translate to TV exactly. The story doesn't work the same. So TV has to tell a different story. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally on board with that. We get to see roughly the same idea, but told from a different aspect, a different angle. And it makes it more entertaining, because who wants predictability? We get enough of that as is on some of the episodes, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And from what I understand, now I didn't read the comics, but from what I understand, it was extremely chaotic and there was just so much going on that I don't think they would have been able to condense that or bring that all in, like Martin said, to the TV medium. I don't think it would have translated well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so in this part one, let's start breaking it down. In this part one, we got pretty much a Supergirl episode. All of our main characters and cast were there. Of course, the story, you know, led itself to Crisis. But I want to ask my co-host, Justina, what did you think of this take on Superman? I thought it was an interesting perspective. I don't remember seeing a Superman that felt like he couldn't have a decent life, right? That it was too much for him to hope for. What were your thoughts on the conversation between he and Kara along these lines?
Yeah, I was surprised by that he felt like he couldn't really have all aspects of life. And we get throughout the crossover, you know, we meet other versions of Superman and Clark Kent that have also given up being Superman because they feel like they can't do both. And I'm hoping with our new show coming soon that we'll be able to see this version of Lois and Clark balance being a superhero, being a husband, being a father all together, because I think that would be a really interesting story to tell to balance it.
Yeah. Well, we know this is essentially a backdoor pilot to Tyler Hoechlin and Elizabeth Tulloch's series, right? So we get our, like I said, we get our main cast of characters. We get salty Lena, who's still upset, and that's events that are going on throughout this season of Supergirl for the anybody who's not watching. We get Brainy, which I thought was he had a good role in this. And we got just an itty bitty bit of Martian Manhunter, who I think is going to play a much larger role, you know, going forward, obviously, as the one of the paragons. So, okay, let's I know this isn't particularly part one, but now that I've said the word, I need to get this kind of out in the open. Let's have a discussion about paragons. Okay, so right off the bat, it occurs to me that I don't know if this definition of paragons is kind of a in motion kind of a thing, because we had Oliver as the first one who was named as a paragon. But yet in the seven that the monitor set up for us, Oliver was not one of those. And I mean, that was post his death. But in looking at the symbols that were on the anti-monitor's door and all that, one of those is clearly an arrow symbol. So what is there a good explanation to this? Is it just all in flux? Let me pick on Cammy. Cammy, what do you think about this paragon thing?
Well, I like to see that it did indicate things could change. You know, we've had references actually throughout Arrow or foreshadowing that Oliver could be something akin to a paragon. But having this morph into this Spectre idea, and things aren't exactly what they seemed, and we now have paragons who, you know, we have Lex Luthor, and we have, you know, we've got the unexpected in here. Mm-hmm. It ties into something Martin and I had been discussing about Arrow, which is that it is now focusing on showing a potential future, showing a potential thing, and then changing that, doing something different than expected. In a crossover, the most straightforward way of doing that is simply doing a slightly different plot than what was actually in Crisis. Mm-hmm. But even these minor changes where, you know, they showed us all the symbols and the promotional material and we expected Oliver to be, you know, to be a paragon of something, and now he is something else, you know, terms we're quite familiar with on Arrow. It keeps us on our toes a bit in what could easily be a pretty predictable situation, right?
Yeah, they really kicked that off with having, they thought it was going to, you know, we thought it was going to be Batman being a paragon, but it really being Batwoman. And we get that idea of who's going to be the paragon kind of flipped on its ear throughout these three episodes. So that was cool to see.
Yeah. All right. So we'll come back to this issue. Jeff, we've not explored this idea of Batwoman that much here on the network. We've decided not to go forward with a dedicated Batwoman podcast. We're 9 episodes in to this first season. I know you've been following it, keep the discussions going on our Facebook group. This seemed to me like a real introduction of who we want Kate to be, right? I don't think the series has really built that up yet. Tell me where you are with Batwoman at this point.
Well, I think both in last year's crossover and this year's, we're seeing a little more of who, like you said, who we want Batwoman to be. I've appreciated some of the acting in Batwoman, but not particularly Ruby all that much. She's still got a ways to go for me, but I think that they've done a good job of taking some of the plot lines from the comics and translating those to the big screen, and as particularly the ones that I had read with Alice and some of the different storylines. So I appreciate the storylines. I just feel like, you know, we're early days here, and it feels like this crossover – she has taken over the spot that Supergirl has occupied in past years, where it wasn't so much about the Batwoman, you know, storyline. It was about the crossover that you had with Supergirl in years past.
Right.
Where this year you've had, like you said, we had a whole episode focused on the Supergirl character. So I think she's a character and she's brand new in being a hero, feeling her way out, and she's getting thrown into this crisis and having to look at this much different Batman than maybe she's used to, and a different reality that she's used to. So I think it's an interesting look at things, comparing that world's Batwoman to the world she's in. But, you know, still, I think it was a little disappointing for me on the Batman side of things. But I think, like I said, it's early days for her. And so we'll see where we go from there.
Very good. Very good. All right. So let's take a minute and talk about all the fantastic different, you know, cameos and stuff that, that we got in this. Professor, who did you spot right off?
Right off the bat, we got I thought the Batman 1989 reference was spectacular.
Yeah.
I had seen some things leading up to this about how they were going to incorporate Batman 1989.
Yeah.
And that was not what I expected. Robert Wall was a surprise. You had heard nothing about Alexander Knox, you know, appearing. I don't know. I think we all saw that photo floating around. It was going to look like Michael Keaton on the cover of the newspaper, that he like married Selena Kyle. And,
yeah,
you know, we didn't see that. I thought that was a great one that stood out.
Excellent. Burt Ward on Batman 66, I think, was my favorite. So walking.
Holy crimson skies of death.
Walking the dog that was associated with it as well. That was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Will Wheaton in the.
That was a surprise.
Yeah. In the Supergirl part. Yeah. Calling for death and the end is nigh.
Can I ask a question about that particular cameo? Because I love Will Wheaton and I recognized him immediately. I didn't really get the tie-in to Supergirl, but I definitely got a very Rorschach vibe, which I don't think Watchmen is DC. Are they?
Somewhat DC, but he from what I read, he was in it because he voiced animated characters in iterations of the Justice League and some cartoon stuff.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I really like that they included Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
When they had the Huntress running along the rooftop and stuff. I mean, that not a lot of people know about that show.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because that show was on air when superhero TV wasn't quite taking off yet.
Yeah. It was.
I think if they released that show now, it would be a hit because it was fantastic. The characters are great. The stories were well written. It should be still going. It's unfortunate that it only made it the one season.
Mm-hmm. I would like them
people can't see us, but raise your hand if you watched that when it was on.
No.
I did.
Yeah.
And the voice of Barbara Gordon, the Oracle, was the same.
Yes.
They got the actress.
Same voice actress. Well.
Yeah. Same voice actress. Yep.
Yep.
All right. So, all right. We need to go here. The green elephant in the room for part one. Martin, Cammy, like I couldn't even cry, and I wanted to cry. Like when Oliver's time came, I wanted to cry, and I couldn't even cry. I didn't even know what was going on. I mean, hit me, help me cry.
Well, Cammy, I want to hear your thoughts on this, because me and Harley here ranted about it on our Legends coverage, if you guys haven't heard our Legends take on it yet. So we ranted quite a bit about it. Neither of us are happy with it. I want to hear what your thoughts are, Cammy.
Well, I have two, and I'll start with, for once, Flash and I are on the same page.
Hallelujah.
I didn't love it as a death scene, but I'll caveat that by saying I also didn't buy it as a death scene, right?
Yeah.
We know he's not staying dead. But a part of me was sort of like, well, let me see, right? We've taken this show Arrow and used it to spin off every other show, right? It's sort of the vehicle through which other shows have spawned. And in doing so, Arrow frequently has to sacrifice certain special moments to be a part of crossovers, right? The 100th episode got shared. It was the whole alien thing. The wedding got shared. I was like, why wouldn't at this point Oliver's death be on a Sunday night during Supergirl instead of Arrow? Why not? You know, like you just toss in the cards at that point. And I'll say I was just being salty. I didn't buy it. I knew he was coming back. I knew we were getting more. Flash hates this. I look at spoilers. You know, I knew we were going to see more of him.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of me that was just being a little salty that we didn't have a Arrow-only death scene.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that he wasn't even really in episode 2 either. Like, I thought it was so disrespectful to Oliver, the character, and Stephen Amell, the actor, that episode 2, he was basically a dead body dragged and dumped in a pit. And then he jumps out of the pit. He's a zombie for 5 seconds, and that's it. That's all we got of him in that episode. It's
the water was clean. The water was clean.
But it's just this is supposed to be centered all around Oliver's story coming to an end. That's what this is all about. He's supposed to be the main focal point. So the way they're handling his part of the story, I just can't abide by. And like you, John, it was hard to be emotional. I wanted to be. I'm supposed to be. I've been building up for this to come to an end.
Yeah.
And I couldn't feel it then.
Yeah.
And that's more upsetting.
Yeah. So, okay, let's go back to last year's crossover and the deal, right? Because we all sat around the same chairs and microphones talking about how we suspected that Oliver gave this deal, that Kara and Barry would go on to several more seasons of their own show, right? And Oliver would then sacrifice himself. And so the writers twisted it to say, well, that was only good for that event. How do we feel about
that? I got to call boo on that because that's not what they made it sound like a year ago. They totally laid that out for this.
I think rightfully so. They understand that the stakes are higher in keeping the quote unquote universe alive than just keeping Barry and Kara alive. And I don't say that to diminish Barry and Kara's role in this in any way.
Right.
But since then, we've had these additional heroes. We have these other players, not necessarily even just the new ones like Batwoman, who's absolutely also worth saving in this, but we've had these characters that have kind of risen to the top, wherein we're not really in the same place in the Arrowverse, where for a while it was kind of Oliver, Barry, and Kara, and the legends were just sort of, you know, a group amalgamation, but there wasn't one only. Defining it as they have now with these paragons, it helps cover more ground, and it's allowed other figures, even those who aren't paragons, to also be seen as important in the way that the original deal wasn't, albeit true to the comics.
Yeah. Well, and just to go back to the, you know, just the weirdness of Oliver and all that, is Diggle wasn't even there.
William wasn't there.
I'm
not going to get started again.
Like that. I mean, like the whole thing was set up so oddly that, you know, Cammy's right. It's like this. I mean, there's no way this can be the end because this is terrible.
It was truly terrible.
Okay. All right. So, yes, we do know he moves on, and we'll talk about as we, you know, head toward the end where we think he's going with that, the general consensus on this. So we'll hold that thought. All right. So part two, we get into more of the Bat universe in this, and we find out that there are these paragons. We have Kara Zor-El. We have Sarah Lance. We have the Bat of the future and another Kryptonian who has endured more than any human man could. All right, so everybody goes their own separate ways. How hilarious was it that the Monitor was trying to give this presentation of this only to be cut off by the crying Jonathan Kent? That was hilarious. And the music would stop. He would stop. I loved it because we've, you know, any of us with babies, we've all been there. Sorry. Sorry.
Thank goodness for Mick Rory.
Yes, one of the only redeeming parts of this episode was Mick Rory's
Heatwave, the baby whisperer.
That was perfect. And him reading the novel.
Cage Passion. That's right.
Yes.
Kids love it.
Yeah. Very good for
Mick's letter. Novels are the best.
Okay. Yeah. I've got to say, this episode, I just felt cheated with Batman. In this episode, we have this outstanding, we're expecting a Batman Beyond type of deal. We've got this, you know, looking at things, and we get this totally deranged Bruce Wayne who's willing to kill and wipe things out. It's more of the Kingdom Come type Batman.
Yeah.
And I just felt cheated. I know that it gave people the ability to do different roles and do play things differently than they used to, but to just spin it that way just felt like a cheat. When, you know, to have a more, I guess, you know, I guess since they figured we've done Batman Beyond, let's do something totally different. But I just felt like it was a cheat on that half of it.
Hmm. Now, I will say, to balance that out, I thought returning to what is it? Kingdom? What's the Superman version that we got? Was it Kingdom Come or?
Kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah. So returning to Brandon Routh, like this has been what I have been drooling for right out of this event. You know, to see him there, to see him in the suit, for him to, as Chris holds up the Funko Pop, to see him refer to Jason, his son, back to Superman Returns, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just to canonize all of that within this Arrowverse, I thought was simply fantastic. The music, oh my gosh. The Superman theme.
Get you every time.
Yeah.
Every time he was on scene. Yep.
Yeah. The epic battle there on top of the Daily Planet between the two Supermen. Yeah. I mean, somebody else pipe in here because I could just gush.
What I thought was neat, and I'm going to springboard off of what X-Force 11 said, I felt cheated as someone who watches Batwoman that this felt more like a Superman episode because you go to Smallville, you get, you know, the Kingdom Come Superman.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Batman part of it, while significant, was the B story in this particular episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed seeing Brandon Routh obviously as Superman, but I actually was more into seeing him do Clark Kent again.
Yeah.
That was good too. Yeah.
That was great.
I have to, I'll echo, after the first episode, I was thrilled with the way Kate Kane's vibe and Batwoman's vibe was captured within the crossover. And going into episode two, I mean, we've all kind of commented about how salty we were at the loss of Oliver. But what I was realizing was there was sort of an opportunity for Batwoman to temporarily have the same vibe that Oliver had before, because she has a bit more of that grizzled street fighter. She comes across as extremely present and, you know, high levels of common sense and low tolerance for bull crap, right? You know, there's just that vibe where, you know, she's not quite like Kara and Barry, as much fun as it is to see them interact. Yeah. And I was disappointed in episode two, which was supposed to be her episode, that it didn't center on her as much as I wanted it to, because I thought she was extremely strong. And B, it didn't really center on Batwoman quite as much as the first episode centered on Kara's world, right? And that's what I thought was going to happen, is that in each episode, although everybody's together, we capture their universe's sort of aesthetic. They did that for Supergirl in episode one. They didn't do it for Batwoman, and that was the one I was excited to see.
Agreed. Jess, Let's turn the table over. I do want to come back to Oliver 2046. And I know you guys have talked about this. Mm-hmm. So what I remember, and it's been a long time since I've seen that episode, but from what I remember, Oliver was just different. Like, his appearance was different. His demeanor, everything about him was just off from that Legends episode a long time ago. And he just sort of slipped right in as the Oliver that we've known and loved all this whole time, right? Up to the point where, you know, we're like, we see him right here in season 8. Yeah. So where do you guys come with kind of the closure, as they've put it, for this 2046 kind of timeline?
All right. So Bart and I, we've talked about this a little bit, but just kind of to recap for everyone, like, so what we came to the conclusion of is that this Oliver in 2046 on Earth 16 that we saw, mm-hmm. Although a little bit of a retcon, that he was a little bit younger than the original one we saw. Martin had pointed out that he had the long beard. He was much older.
Yeah.
I still believe that he had lost his arm, and that the arm was missing in this particular episode as well, because Sarah jams an arrow in something and it kind of stops him. So I think that particular event where he loses his arm had already occurred, but this Oliver was younger, which you can kind of, we have recently rewatched season 1, so you can kind of see the differences between this Oliver acting surprised and confused and how are you here, and then when we get to the original 2046 episode, he wasn't as confused. He was almost more like, Sarah, you're here. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of let that play in that he remembers having seen her during this crossover, if you will, and that the 2046 episode we saw is still in the future somehow, even though it's the same year. Now that I'm talking about this, it's making less sense. Martin, can you chime in for a second?
Yeah, no, you got it right, Jess. That's what we kind of picked apart about, is that in this crossover event, he is a younger version of him, and certain events hadn't happened yet. And that's why there was, you know, a difference between the way he behaved towards the team showing up in the Arrow Cave compared to the last time when we saw it in the Legends episode. So no, I think you explained it right. It's just it was different. And that's how they retconned it, is by showing us an earlier version. Maybe not everything had happened yet that we saw in the Legends episode. But at the same time, where they really retconned it was throwing in the fact that it was a different Earth. And where me and Jess can get our heads around is, how come all this time we didn't know the Wave Rider can jump to different universes and nobody noticed?
So
I also think they could have kept themselves out of trouble if they just would have took the 2046 out of it and just said we were meeting Earth 16 Oliver, and that 46 one was also Earth 16 Oliver, but we're not in 2046 right now. That would have fixed the aging problem.
And the other thing you got to think about too is why? What was the whole point of that? Other than going to get Clark's baby, there was no reason to meet this Oliver on a different Earth. And the only thing I could demise is that at the moment I thought this is how they're going to bring this Oliver in to replace the one we just lost in episode 1. So would they be meeting this Oliver for? He has nothing to do with it. There's no point.
And why wouldn't they bring him back to join this fight? Okay. So I know I'm jumping around all over the place, but Green Butterfly, Lex Luthor is back, right? He was only mostly dead.
Just mostly.
So Monitor brings him back. Kara's not happy. Kate says, what I heard out of that was, next time you're dead, you're all dead. So... I don't know. I felt like Lex was there just sort of to take up time. And I don't feel like we had time to spend with his kind of side mission of, you know, getting rid of all the Superman. I also wanted to give you this pitch because I know that you have been diving in deep to Smallville. So talk to me about what you were feeling through Lex's arc just in this episode and getting back to Smallville. Like, walk us through what you were thinking there.
I do agree that with a villain like the Anti-Monitor, we didn't really need Lex Luthor. But of course, because he just thinks he's the most important bad guy of all the bad guys, he has to wheedle his way into everything. Mm. And it did seem odd to see him with the in Smallville with the Tom Welling Superman, because, you know, obviously that's not really the Lex that belongs there. So it was sort of like odd to me to watch. I was just like, this is weird. I don't get this. But it does make sense to me that if somebody's going to mess with the entire multiverse, that Lex is going to want in on it, and he's going to want. And the thing is, it's like the Monitor wanted him. So he's in the story because the Monitor says he has had a role to play. Mm-hmm. And now when we're left with the cliffhanger that we're left with for our holiday break, like, did he all, what he's already done doesn't seem too impactful. So I'm just waiting to see what he does next, because the Monitor literally brought him back to life for a reason. So that's crazy to me. So like, that's why he belongs here, because the Monitor could have left him dead, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, it's weird. So I'm hoping that in the last two episodes that we get a better idea on why he was called back from the dead for this.
Right. And I understand the whole assembling every hero that we've ever seen. We got, Ray and the guys from Titans. And we see all of these different heroes that are going to have to take on the task of the Anti-Monitor when it's all said and done come part five. I get that. But I think you have to be very selective in terms of how you deal with the villains on the other side of it, right? So,
right.
I think to single out Lex, I don't know. I mean, why don't we also have the Joker? Why don't we also have, some of these paragons, if you will, of evil that are also represented here as opposing forces, or maybe tied in with the Anti-Monitor? I don't know. I'm sort of spitballing off the top of my head. Anybody else have thoughts on this?
I think they're trying to make it seem like an unlimited universe in what is a limited universe. And the spread of paragons that they have is their best attempt of capturing that, by having some out of the blue ones, by having some villains, by having some nearly unknown options, and then our heroes, right? Which really is the limited universe we're working within. It allows us to focus only on the heroes that we really do care about, while still making it seem as if the paragons represent the entire multiverse. And this is as close as they're going to get to that without making paragon status meaningless by having there be, 30 to 50 paragons, and every cool thing that's ever been in the DC universe has something to do with the paragon. I would swap out some if I could as well, but I think that's why they've done what they did.
And when I've done some research for the Cougars Comic Corner, there is precedent in the comic books for Lex to start to form his own bad guy team, kind of like the Legion of Doom was. There is a spinoff story that spins off from Crisis where Lex starts a bad guy alliance. Okay. So I don't know if that's what we're going to be facing, in Supergirl going forward post-Crisis or not.
Hmm. Okay.
I want to add to what Justina was saying, though, about Lex being with Tom Welling. First off, Tom Welling, I think, is the best cameo we have had. His performance there, we haven't seen him since Smallville. That was the greatest feeling I had, was seeing him back on screen again, back part of this universe. And even though he was only playing Clark Kent, his on-screen charisma, he was larger than life. And I'm sorry to say, but John Cryer as Lex just could not hold a candle to him. Tom Welling was overshadowing everything in that performance. Like it was, he was outmatching him. And that's what I think felt weird about why it felt uncomfortable to see this version of Lex on screen with Tom Welling, because Tom Welling just had so much on-screen presence, John Cryer couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
I didn't buy this version of Lex. Like I didn't understand his purpose. I didn't, the menace didn't come across, the evil genius that Lex usually carries didn't come across. Maybe that's because I'm not watching Supergirl.
Yeah.
And others have told me that his performance was maybe a little different, maybe a little bit more menacing. You know, you kind of get that feel, and I don't have that background with that character. But not having that background kind of coming in, I was like, what is this guy doing here? And why is he just everywhere? He's making it feel, to me, it felt disjointed, kind of almost like a tangent, like, hey, let's go follow this guy just for some fun. And I was like, why are you here? You're ruining my fun. Like, go away.
Yeah, he's definitely more over the top in this crossover than he is in the regular, mm-hmm. you know, Supergirl series. So. Yeah, hopefully as we see kind of where he goes from here, you know, hopefully more of the character that we've come to know and really appreciate. I really have appreciated John in this role, and hopefully that will start to translate. All right.
See, I was going to say, yeah. If I could just jump in real quick, yeah. I think the Cryer thing would have been totally worth it. I'm going for comic relief here. If when he showed up and Brandon Routh Superman sees him, which is an extension of the Christopher Reeve Superman, mm-hmm. if he turned to John Cryer and said, Lenny, what are you doing here?
That's right. We did get the Superman 3 reference. I've fought myself twice now.
Yes.
That was fantastic. All right, Chris, we have been very quiet about the Flash so far. He is the paragon of love because every time we see him, he's groping with Iris. I mean, come on. No, I do have a serious question. With him, I know you've been keeping up. With him so focused on, I have to die, I have to die, I have to die, I have to die. Was he, like, I feel like he was almost disappointed that he couldn't die. like his character was so engrossed in what he thought he was supposed to do that he couldn't see outside, like a bigger picture kind of thing. What do you think?
I totally agree with that sentiment because, again, through the first 8 episodes this season, he was preparing the team, preparing Joe, preparing his family, preparing himself to make this sacrifice.
Yeah.
And in previous episodes this season, you know, people try to get to him like, you know, we can change this. You know, Iris, you know, we can change this. Cisco, we can change this. We can, there's got to be something we can do. And he comes to grips with it. And in this episode, he has the treadmill pulled out from under him, so to speak, you know, and I thought it was really well done when they make this connection that a Flash has to die, not necessarily this Flash or this Barry Allen. And I thought it was really well done. And again, he was mopey Barry, like, I want it to die. And now he doesn't get to do that.
Yeah, but just having John Wesley Shipp back on here and having such an important role, and he's the one that decided, that was one of the best scenes of this whole first 3 episodes so far. He has, again, such amazing depth in this role, getting to play it again after playing it in the 90s. He's been one of the best things about The Flash, and they need to keep bringing him back. But I just love that he got to be the hero that possibly saves this universe. And it was a great twist. That was also, I think the 3rd episode was by far better than the first 2 combined, even because they had the writing, they had the acting, they had the intense edge of your seat drama and tension. And for him to get to be, to do that sacrifice was the most emotional punch we've seen so far. Mm-hmm.
It was.
I'll be honest, we talked about tearing up before, and when they had that little mini flashback scene of Barry and Iris talking before he goes, tears in my eyes. Mm. And the Flash has done that a few times to me in 6 years where I really feel connected to what they're putting on in terms of their story.
Yeah. Tears in my eyes when they flash back to Barry and Tina McGee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It was like, yes. I wasn't expecting that at all. And it was like, oh my goodness.
And they will be the theme song from that show in too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
They put that flashback in post. That was not like originally in one of the after shows they were talking about that they decided to put that footage in after the, you know, the episode had been filmed. So that's just that added punch. And yeah, having the theme song woven in there was just mm-hmm. amazing.
Yeah. All right. So the Paragons, we have, where they're all identified now. We have Kara as the Paragon of Hope. We have Kate as the Paragon of Courage. We have Superman, and now Lex as the Paragon of Truth. We have Martian Manhunter, and I couldn't remember. Honor, maybe?
Honor.
Yeah, Paragon of Honor. We have this new guy as the Paragon of Humanity, right? Yeah, there we go. Ryan Choi. Okay, so he is
Adam 2.0.
The yes, new Adam.
The yep. new Atom. Because
possibly.
I'm going to be bad.
Ask Jess what you think of that idea.
Don't ask me. Just listen to the Tomorrow's Legend podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. What's the history here? He's from Ivytown. He's a professor. He worships the ground Ray Palmer walks on.
As you know, all.
Yeah. Well.
Yes.
So, what? What's the story here, guys?
Of Ryan specifically. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've not been introduced to him at all. I mean, he was introduced within this crossover, so he's a brand new character. But the rumor mill has it that he is the Adam 2.0. There's, I mean, aside from him worshiping Ray Palmer, you know, there's the reference to his research and all of that. So it was very clearly foreshadowed. He will eventually become the Adam 2.0. We all know Brandon Routh is leaving. We all have very different opinions on whether or not that should be happening or not happening and not happy about it. But it'll be interesting to see like what they ultimately do with him and how they sort of bring him in. My initial gut reaction, it was recorded on our podcast, but now that I've kind of had some time to marinate about it, I mean, I'm not happy that they basically are saying, you know, Ray Palmer, you're done, your storyline is done, so we're going to move you off, and we're, you know, so if they replace him immediately with Ryan Choi, I think I'll probably be a little annoyed with that. But as far as like the character goes, like in Crisis, I enjoyed his performance. I actually quite enjoyed him. I kind of liked that he gets to be the Paragon of Humanity as the only one without a quote unquote superpower. I know they're not all superpowered, but I mean, he truly is like, he doesn't have any sort of suits, any tech at the moment. I mean, we all expect he'll eventually have some form of, I guess, tech to become the Atom. But right now he truly is like just a regular guy. He's a family guy, you know? And so I did kind of like that about him. I kind of found it a bit endearing. So I will begrudgingly admit that.
You know, to add on to that, Jess, his performance, I did enjoy him, but he didn't come across to me as an Atom character. He more suited the Blue Beetle. The way
I would
perform.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. And I think they should make him a Blue Beetle. I don't know if they could change or add the writing in that he uses his tech or something to create a Beetle suit instead. I just the way he portrayed himself on screen, he was much more Blue Beetle to me.
Huh. I would love that. And wasn't Brandon Routh originally supposed to be a Blue Beetle?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very cool if they sort of took that twist with it.
I will say, over on Arrow, we've gotten really familiar with multiple characters picking up the same mantle over and over. We've got, for example, a laundry list of canaries of every color at this point. So I will say it gets better, if that's comforting. They do try to do variations. You're able to tell them apart after a while. Some of the new ones are sometimes even better than the earlier ones. This is me trying to comfort you.
That's fair. That's fair.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why we're here.
Yeah. Therapy.
This is a cathartic experience. Cammy, so I have done some research. I understand what was going on with the officer on Purgatory. I get it, but for your casual viewer, like, that came out of nowhere. How can you help? Can you help, you know, help me, help us understand what that transaction was, and what you think, well, I'm sorry, what you think is going on within Oliver at this point?
He's becoming something else. He's becoming someone else. I'm getting a thumbs down from Jess. I'm trying to make this cheesy arrow.
I'm so sorry. I mean, that's his opening dialogue on every single episode, right?
Yes,
something else.
I know, but I hate it. Sorry, go on.
You hate the opening dialogue, or you hate that he's a specter rather than a paragon?
Look, I am not happy about this whole specter business.
Really? Why?
Why? Well, first of all, they killed him in a very unceremonious fashion, and he is still very dead. Spectre is a very deep cut. I mean, it was introduced on Constantine, the original Constantine, like once upon a time, if I am not mistaken.
Yep.
I don't know that that's the same actor. Is that the same actor?
I don't think so. Oh, is it?
Isn't it?
I don't know. He looks very similar. It's the same. It's the same character name. Obviously, John Constantine, quote, recognizes him. And because I'm sitting here going, why do I know that guy? Why does this sound familiar? And I'm like, this happened in Arrow. And I'm like, no, it didn't. This happened in Constantine. Like, that is a seriously deep cut for the casual viewer. I only very recently watched Constantine. So. Well,
not only that, even if you're not a DC fan, I mean, not many people know about Spectre. If you see him in full costume, you would recognize him. But just to see a guy's eyes go green, that means nothing to 95% of the people out there.
Well, somebody might have thought he was the Hulk.
In their defense, while I am joking about this becoming something else thing, Oliver didn't need to become another hero. This isn't like, you know, we see on The Flash, Caitlin becoming Killer Frost and Cisco becoming Vibe, and it's this entirely separate power that they have to acquire. Oliver never needed powers. He never needed another persona. He was the Green Arrow as really almost a code name at some points in this show. It became sort of a legend, and that's something they've built upon. But the other heroes having powers or time travel or this, that, or the other, it's never what Oliver needed. So by doing this, I see this as their way attempting to honor him going out by making him even above the idea of being one concept, one paragon, while also allowing what he is to be true to the nature of Oliver. It is a leader. It is someone from whom all these other things have spun out. And conceptually, it is not the most notorious name in the book. Yes, it is not well known. I hadn't heard of Spectre prior to this. I had to do my Googling as well, but it makes sense. And if he had just been portrayed as the paragon of courage, right? Just not to pick on Batwoman. I like her as well. But if he was just that and he was reduced down to one concept, right when he is dying, having changed so many times throughout this season or throughout this series, really, I think that would have been reductive. I'm not saying it's reductive for other characters, but they are also not dying and leaving. And he is. His death was not what we saw already, thank goodness, but he will in some way die or leave or exit with the monitor or whatever at the end of Arrow the show, if not necessarily at the end of this crossover.
Yeah, and I think they had to write themselves out of that corner of we've got to have him in the back episodes of Arrow, and doing the Spectre is a way to do that. And Spectre is huge in Crisis, but you know, it's like you said, it's a deep cut. How do you get that character in? At one time you had Hal Jordan was the Spectre for years. So, you know, he's a character who takes over characters, and I think it's a way out and a way to mention some of the stuff that came through Crisis. Is it the best? No. But I think they could have done a better job of writing it in.
So let me just ask you, Jeff, for Spectre does take over other characters. That's what he does in the comic books.
He's a spirit of vengeance. And so he inhabited this detective, and then that spirit of vengeance takes over Ollie. So in the comics, he went from the detective character to taking over Hal Jordan, and Hal Jordan was the Spectre for years. And then he came back to being, you know, Green Lantern. So it's, you know, it's a spirit of vengeance taking over a existing person.
Okay, see, that clarifies a lot, because I didn't know that myself, and I bet you a lot of our listeners out there didn't know that. Because I was going to throw in the argument, and I talked about it with Jess in our show. I wasn't so sure Oliver got taken over or is becoming Spectre there, because I just watched the scene again while you guys were talking. Oliver turns to him and says, "What do we do now?" Spectre's eyes glow green. Oliver turns around. Everybody's gone. And then the scene cuts to everybody reappearing back on the Wave Rider with a green glow about them, like the teleport beam is green. So to me, it's like all Spectre did was teleport them away. Oliver's still Oliver, and he's going to go on a mission with Spectre for whatever it is they got to do together. There's still, I think, a very small chance that might be the case. But the way you explain Spectre now makes a little bit more sense, and it's possibly correct.
Yeah. We'll see.
So, Jeff, they chose to take on a real Batman v Superman vibe in this, obviously, with Kevin Conroy and the road they painted him in as far as the destructive Batman and the not totally non-hopeful Batman. Sure, let this earth go. Sounds good. And then they brought it back to Kate versus Kara. Right, in terms of her possibly Kate needing to use the kryptonite to keep Kara from messing with the book and so on and so forth. Do we think this is done, or are there further steps to play in this, do you think?
I don't know. To me, it felt like she saw what Bruce had become and wanted some guarantee because, like I said, she's new to all this. And so she took the kryptonite, but then she reflects on who she sees Kara as and gives the kryptonite over, you know, not wanting to be that version of Batman, you know, to be different. So I like that. I think it's done. The sad thing to me is watching that scene between these two and comparing and contrasting that with Lena and Kara in this season was just very interesting of, okay, I've got this up and this ability to get one up on somebody, and I'm going to hold it and, you know, I'm going to let, as opposed to I'm going to let it go. So it was interesting comparing and contrasting those two as well. So I think, it's done as far as she's not going to keep anything back, and they're going to develop that world's finest type relationship with them between the two, as opposed to the Batman v Superman aspect of it.
Hmm. Chris, what does Flash have left? I mean, his kind of part of it, it seems like is done. Like, where do you think he goes from here?
Well, when he picks himself up from moping and not being able to, you know, die. I'm really not sure, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not sure what's going to happen, and I'm curious to see how they set up the whole, how is the Arrowverse or the Spectreverse going to be different post-crisis, you know?
Yeah.
You know, how many Earths are we going to have, you know, things like that. I don't know where Barry goes from here. I really don't know.
And we haven't talked Black Lightning, because we've got Black Lightning in the episode. And I enjoyed how they brought him in. I haven't gotten to see as much of this season as I would like. But yeah, that's my big question, Professor, how is this going to impact the world post-crisis? Is it going to be truly a crisis event that changes the reality of this universe where there's fewer universes, or is things just going to magically go back to how they were? And it's like we put everything right and everything's back to normal. I just don't know how they're going to work it.
I don't know. It depends on what normal is. I kind of want to speculate that maybe we get two Earths, and that second Earth is maybe that movie universe, and now we can't go between Earths. And then on this TV Earth, they kind of correct everything, and now you've got, you know, the back half of all of these shows, and everybody's on one Earth. And, you know, not to get too far ahead, but I hope they tease that next year's crossover is, you know, Dawn of Justice redo, and we form the TV Justice League next fall.
Awesome.
But just to add in, though,
the Hall of Justice.
Jeff said we haven't really talked about Black Lightning, and I think this was probably my favorite portrayal of Jefferson. I watched the first season. I haven't really kept up with the second season, but I think having him on the show, he fit in almost instantly.
Yeah.
And his performance was powerful. You could imagine what his character was going through, and then he had to somehow work through that and be his, you know, his powers were needed at that moment to help stop the treadmill. This was the best scene I've seen him in. I really loved how he fit in with the team. I loved how they fit his abilities in and what he needed to do. It was just a very intense moment for him, and it's like welcome to the universe finally.
I have been keeping up with it in real time, and we're midway through season three, and I happened to watch it in order of that episode of Black Lightning, and then I picked up on the crisis, and yes, to watch him lose everything and not even fully realize what was going on, and then get basically zapped in by, you know, by the monitor into this situation. Yes, I mean he played it pitch perfect, and my hats off to Cress Williams as usual. This season has been frankly just odd, very weird, but I'm hanging with it. You know, it's good stuff. So what do we think Kara's purpose is from here, the paragon of hope? Where does she go from here?
Well, one of my favorite things about this crossover is her scenes that she had with Kate, and how she said she needed some of Kate's courage and Kate needed some of her hope, because for obvious reasons it's really hard for Kara to feel hopeful in this moment. I mean, to lose everything again. So I think she will bounce back from it. I think she will find the light for sure. But I really appreciated those scenes where she leaned on Kate and said, I need a little bit of what you are. You need a little bit of me. I think that that's what these team ups are all about. Like, we get to see how these people's strengths and weaknesses work together. But I still have a lot of hope in our paragon of hope that she can pull it together.
Hmm. Martin, we got a nice drop in there of Felicity Smoke and how the monitor is working with her. And this, what was it? Book of Heroes, book of, I can't remember what they called it. Do you remember?
No, I don't actually. Sorry.
But anyway, it was good to see that she is still a part of the mix. We all know she's coming back for the final episode, episode 10 of Arrow. But anyway, just a nice nod to keeping her alive in here.
Yeah, and I think because of the way she left Arrow, and we weren't sure if she was coming back. So the fact that they've name dropped her quite a few times is kind of keeping her in the mix, that she's still involved somehow, like the things that she did before she left is somehow interacting with all the events that are going on. And we do know she's coming back. What we don't know is it just for the very final scene, or is she going to be in the entire episode at the end of Arrow? We don't know that. So yeah. And I'm glad we don't know. I don't, again, unlike Cammy, my counterpart here, I don't like spoilers, so I don't want to know.
Well, it's also one of the things that they've really kept a tight lid on as well. Yeah. They've of course teased, you know, for promotional purposes that she's coming back, but even my Spidey spoiler senses aren't breaking into that box. I think they're keeping that pretty tight-lipped. But it makes sense how well they've transitioned that. It was smart of them to have her go off with the monitor. It leaves the door not only open for her to continually be present, but also to be present at a pretty critical ending moment that they knew was approaching.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. General speculation. What do we get in parts 4 and 5?
Well, part 4 is the Arrow episode, so...
Yep.
Or no, is it Legends that comes back for it? No, Legends gets the finale.
Yeah.
So it is the Arrow episode. They better center it around Oliver and let him have the main focus of one entire episode of this mix. I mean, they've got a lot to explain.
That's a lot to ask, Flash. For Arrow? To have an Arrow episode?
They do have a lot to explain, but I saw the trailer, but I won't say anything about it because I know others like to watch them.
They've also got to introduce other Arrow characters too, because so far we've had Lila and we finally had Diggle show up, and it was, I think Diggle also, that was something I wanted to bring up. Diggle had some fantastic scenes with Oliver, and even before that, like when he showed up and he was extremely pissed off that he wasn't there for Oliver, mm-hmm. when he promised him, "I'm there with you to the end." Like, I love that for Diggle. It was great. So I hope there's something that the two of them get to do together as well in the episode.
That reminds me, Martin, like, I am so surprised that Sarah backpedaled on putting her foot down over the Lazarus pit. I thought that Sarah would absolutely put her foot down and keep it down. I did not expect her to like back out and be like, "Well, I miss Ollie too, so okay, we can put him in that Lazarus pit."
Yeah, you'd think they'd learned their lesson by now. I mean, how many people have gone through it, right? And it's caused problems every single time.
Hey, I mean, we brought Thea back, and she's kind of doing all right out there.
But she was only almost dead. There's a difference
tiny
between,
bit dead.
There's a difference between mostly dead and dead dead. That's the whole soul retrieval business.
And that brings to another great cameo. We got Lucifer.
Yes.
Was so funny. That was so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're missing our Scarlet Cougar tonight. She would have drooled over that. So.
But it tied Constantine in really good, too, because I was wondering how, once he came on screen, how are they going to fit him into this? But it actually made a really good story plot point for Constantine and what his purpose is in this crossover. So I was happy for that, because he's been a little bit of an oddball on Legends, and it was nice that this was well written for him.
It was. It felt more Constantine. I really did like that. I liked, as soon as we saw Earth 666, it's like, yes, Lucifer's coming.
All right, other general speculation about what is yet to come.
Well, I really think that they are kind of masquerading this idea of a reductive or disappearing universe. But what they're really doing is expanding and connecting universes at all costs. Mm-hmm. So at every turn, every time they seem to be reducing it, I see an expansion. They have brought in Black Lightning for the first time. They've created this massive crossover that's actually a true crossover. I know we've all kind of griped about past ones that were actually only 3 shows when it seems like it was 4. They've got everybody in the same room. They've explained how they can get into the same room. So even shows that are ending, like Arrow, or shows that are, you know, way out there and left, you know, field and not usually playing with our CWDC shows, can come together. We've brought the concept of Batman into this. It's extremely expansive in a way past crossovers have not. And I say this as someone who's not usually a fan of crossovers. I see this as an expansion for the purpose of Arrow. I'm specifically hoping that the future characters, so Mia, William, Connor, etc., kind of take center stage alongside Oliver. Oliver first and foremost, of course, in the Arrow verse, so that allows for this expansion, this potential spinoff of that show, and for these leads to continue.
Well, and they got to include Dinah and Renee and Roy as well. I mean, we need to have our Arrowcast in here. They've never really gotten to be part of a crossover that much. So,
Hey, I'm still waiting for a John Diggle Green Lantern by the end of this crisis. That would be such a great way to kind of close this out.
Well, yeah, especially because they brought in what episode was it on when they on the other Earth, his father's last name was Stewart, or his adoptive father was Stewart. Yeah. I mean, they made the connection already.
Yeah. So Flash 90 recognized him as the Stewart.
Green Lantern. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a question for you guys. Since Legends is getting to be the finale of this, it can go one of two ways. Legends is either goofy or it's straight up serious and hardcore. Which version are we going to get to wrap up this crisis event? Are we going to get a goofy wrap up, or are we going to get a pretty hardcore serious ending to this thing?
We all know that Bebo is taking out the Anti-Monitor, right?
No.
You beat me to it.
Chris, we are not friends.
No. I will stop watching all of the shows.
This goes into my prediction. One, I think that Arrow Squad is going to be disappointed by the Arrow episode. I say that because if you look at the crossover as a whole, it's different than what they've done in past years, where you got the Supergirl-centric episode, you got the Arrow-centric episode, you got an Arrow-centric episode. And I think this year their approach has been, we've got 5 hours to play with. And Supergirl did it a little bit. Arrow didn't feel like an episode of, I'm sorry, Flash didn't feel like an episode of The Flash, and Batwoman didn't feel like a Batwoman episode. So I think they just said, we've got 5 hours to make content. And I think there's more of a blurring of the individual shows. So that's where I think you guys might be disappointed in the Arrow episode. And to go to your question, Legends of Tomorrow is just going to be that last, 42 minutes of the story. It's not going to feel like a Legends episode, I don't think.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think the only distinct differences from episode to episode is that the casts from each show got to be there. So we had Supergirl cast, they weren't in the next one. We had Batgirl cast, and Flash cast showed up for the third episode. I think that's really the only standout points.
Yeah, because you're not even getting the intros to the episodes like we've gotten in past years.
Yeah, that's true.
But the only thing, I'm with you, Chris. Like, I really am. The only thing is, to me, the story is not as seamless as Crisis on Earth X. That, to me, was 4 hours of television. There was truly no Arrow episode. There was no Flash episode. It was just a 4-hour event. And I think that they have tried in this 5-hour event, while we're not getting the introduction cards where we're saying, okay, this is the Arrow episode, this is the Supergirl episode, it's not as seamlessly done. Like, we're still getting the beats of the cast in their quote, like, hours, I guess. But I'm with you in that I don't think that it's going to be goofy Legends. I think it's going to finish out the story. I'm hoping that in the last two episodes, we get a little bit more explanation as to the Monitor and his motivations. I'm hoping that they tie more of it together, because honestly, the first three episodes have at points felt disjointed and not necessarily connected. I'm confused on some of the characters. I'm confused why they're there. And I'm confused on the motivations of the Monitor at the end of the day. Like, we haven't had that fleshed out well enough for me personally. So I'm looking forward to that. And I also heard that potentially Legends could be dealing with the aftermath of Crisis. Has anyone heard that speculation?
I know. That would make sense, though.
I think all the shows will in some shape or form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think part four, this is my own speculation, I think part four has to deal with some kind of backstory for the Anti-Monitor. Right? Yeah. We have to get kind of up to speed on where he's come from and what his motivations are. So I think, to Chris's point, I think you're right. I'm not sure how Arrow-centric the episode's going to be as opposed to Anti-Monitor-centric, honestly.
which is okay. I mean, that might fill in what he's doing with Oliver. I mean, they gave us a tiny bit. He started, which character was he talking to when he started talking about how he used to have family and he lost them? I mean, they did open the door for us to get a little bit. Hmm.
And I hope we do. I personally would like some more to flesh him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise there's no real, I mean, there's no ongoing motivation as to why we're fighting him. So.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
All right, Jeff, I got a question for you before I forget. In the comic books, they didn't destroy Earth One, did they? Because that's another difference this TV show did. They just at the very end of episode three, everybody's dead except the seven Paragons. That never happened in the books, did it?
No. They have to play things out differently with this. And so I think that it's just a way of upping the ante of making things feel more dire because they don't have as large of cast of characters on multiple Earths that people are familiar with, and you're drawing on all those heartstrings. So they've got to make it feel, you know, convey that weight. So that let's destroy the one Earth that's left, and we've only got these people. So I think that's how they're doing it.
So again, now that the door is open for them to do whatever they want with this Crisis storyline, they've now taken two major steps really far away from the comic book storyline. Mm-hmm. Destroyed everybody. So now where are they going to go? Everything is up in the air. We have no idea how they're going to finish this off.
Mm-hmm. All right. Absolute best moment so far out of the three episodes. Justina.
Kate stopping Supergirl from opening the book. And using the book to bring back Earth 38.
Excellent. Chris.
I'm going to go with, I got to go to Tom Welling, Superman, and Brandon Routh as Superman.
Gotcha. Okay. Jeff.
it's hard. I'm going to say that going off of what the professor said with Welling, playing that character of who he really was in Smallville and really showing him that he would give up the powers in order to have a regular life and a family. And so I just think that that ups the stakes because of looking at this whole universe and making it personal that this is about families and how it's affecting people's families. So I think that really made it for me.
Too. Jess.
I'm going to go with, I think, first and foremost, the Earth 90 Barry making the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that was the most impactful scene for me and probably one of my favorites. And also, I have to mention this because I have to. Leonard replacing Gideon as the voice of the Waverider was awesome.
There we go. Martin.
Jess, you stole my thunder. I'm so sorry.
Yep.
But that is okay. I will agree with quite a few of your choices. I think Tom Welling just playing his role. We've seen a lot of articles online. It is the perfect way to close off Smallville. The closing we never got, really. Perfect way to close that. But for me, it's John Wesley Shipp playing the 90s Flash and just getting to be the hero. Because I got to meet him at Dragon Con when I was down there. He is an amazing human being. And a phenomenal, there's all the emotion on the Flash is always coming from the scenes with him in those first two seasons. It just, I love it. I love that he got to be the hero. It was amazing.
Cammy, best moment of the three so far.
Oh goodness. That's kind of hard to select. I would say it's a tie between one that I know is going to be really unpopular opinion, so I'll save it for a second. I really enjoyed Kate getting to come in and join the team for the first time. That was the first moment in which I have confidence in this crossover. As they're all coming together, you know, the crisis starts with these bits and pieces in all of each of the different locations, right? And then eventually you see them all come together. And I didn't realize until that moment that Kate, Batwoman, joining this team was what's going to make or break this, because that's representative of, again, as I mentioned before, the universe expanding. Yeah. That went really well. She was really strong, and she has been, I would say, more than one third of, you know, the three episodes so far, despite Batwoman, perhaps not being as Batwoman heavy of an episode as we wanted. So I'd pick her. The one that kind of seems to contradict everything I've said before, Oliver's death scene as a death scene in and of itself alone, with us now knowing that it was not the end and it's not truly his death, really not bad cinema there. That was kind of all right. As a plot point, not great, not a great death. But just the scene alone, knowing it's not the end, kind of cool.
Very good. Very good. All right. I'll say for me, when I sat back and thought about it, it didn't strike me as an exaggeration. And I think in its own small way, it really tried to give the weight of how much Oliver is capable of. When the monitor said that he estimated that Oliver saved an additional billion people, like, that could come off as, I don't know, I mean, just that could be really taken weird, but it really did strike me that of course he did. Like, of course he would have the ability to give enough time to get enough ships out to get another billion people off of Earth 38. Like, that just, of course he did. Like, and that I think really paid, I think, somewhat of a really good homage to what Oliver Queen is all about. So I loved it. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I think we are coming to a close of this part one. Now, our hope and a plan is to get back together very quickly after the January 14th episodes and wrap this up, because our respective shows then kind of take over again in the next week. So I do want to get us all back together and put these two kind of big chunks together between episodes 1-3 and then 4-5. So any parting shots before we sign out?
I have to give the poll question.
Oh, yes.
Which is going to be open all the way until the day before the next episode airs. So you have all the way till January 13th, 2020 to make a decision on this poll question. My question is, how many Earths will be left when Crisis is over? Because right now we're at none. So will it stay at zero? Nothing but antimatter. Will we only have one or two or many or infinite? So I would love it if everyone went over to the blog post for May the Feel episode 98 and cast their vote on what they think about that.
All right. Thank you, Justina. All right. Can't believe it. I can't believe we're here. I can't believe we're in the middle of it. I can't believe that Lex took out Brandon Routh Superman. That is the crime of the century. I mean, come on.
Did you just see Jess's face?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. All right.
Well, let's tip our hats to Brandon Routh one more time though, because he got to play Superman again. It was unfair what happened to him. I don't know if you guys know the story. He was in the running to get the Smallville Clark Kent role, and Tom Welling beat him out in the end. And because of his contract with whatever companies, that's why he got the Superman Returns role. And it was just unfortunate that, you know, that movie wasn't successful enough, and all the things that changed behind the scenes, he never got to come back to play it again. So the fact that they did this for him at the timing that he is leaving Legends, and I just love that the actor himself got this chance, and he did such an amazing job. He looked more like a Superman than we've seen in a while. And he was huge. He's been packing on the muscle. Wow, did he beef up. I mean, he made Tyler Hoechlin Superman look like Superboy. So,
Welling is flannel.
Yeah. Welling's a big guy.
Big boy. All right. All right, let's give everybody an opportunity to sign out and where you can be found.
Are we
found.
Going to do ratings? Are we rating the first three?
Yeah, absolutely. Start us off.
Because I gave the first three 9 paragons found and lost.
All right, yeah, jump in. Anybody?
I'm going to have to average it out. I really liked the first one. I did not like the second one at all, except for a few key moments. And I absolutely love the third one. The third one is the best, and that brings the score up to about a 7.5 overall at the moment.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I gave it a 7. I thought it was unbalanced, but balancing it out between the three, a 7.
As usual, I'm with Jeff. I don't have a snappy rating, but I've got a 7 as well.
Okay.
Well, give it a 6.8.
I can always count on Cammy to bring it down.
Cammy always has the fractions going.
I just have to scale it down just a little bit.
I've got a defect from the group. I'm just super fanboy at this point, and I take DC any way I can get it, and for me it's a 10 so far, and I'm looking forward to the last two episodes.
Nice.
Wish I was in your shoes.
All right, John. And,
I'll have to say 8 times that I have fought myself. Yeah. All right, so yeah, let's give everybody the opportunity to sign out and tell where you can be found, podcast and otherwise. So Martin, so let's lead us off.
All right, well, I'm kind of doing double duty tonight. You can follow me with Cammy at Arrow Squad, and then also with Jess here at Tomorrow's Legends. I do want to throw it out. This is kind of a whole different universe, but if any of you is watching The Mandalorian,
yes.
I have a new show with a brand new co-host called The Mandalore. So check out The Mandalore if you're into that.
Yes. All right, Chris.
The Central City Underground is flooded, so we're not there. But the Facebook group is going strong, where you can certainly connect with the fans of The Flash. And that's where I hang out from time to time. So come on over to the Facebook group and let's talk about The Flash.
Excellent. Cammy.
I also co-host Arrow Squad with Martin. And you can find me on social media at Cammy and Ray, talking about DC TV mostly.
Excellent. Justina.
Well, I hang out with the Silver Vox and K-Vox. Does K-Vox have an episode rating? Like the rest.
Yeah, 9 snores.
Oh, 9 snores? Okay. Yeah. Good job, K-Vox. Good job. So I can be found at Made of Steel every week.
Yes, you can. I also am at Made of Steel, and I can be found on Twitter at SilverVox01. Jess.
I am the other co-host of Tomorrow's Legends. So as Martin said, you can find us on Twitter at Tomorrow's Legends with 1 R. And then you can find me personally at Justin Atlanta, although I tweet sporadically.
All right. Mostly Mr. Jeff.
All right. Well, you can hear me doing Flashes from the Underground on Made of Steel. I just finished up the season 2 of Castle Rock, so you can hear me there. And you can find me at X-Force11 on Twitter.
All right, gang. That'll do it. This is our Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network and Tomorrow's Legends and in addition. So very happy to have you guys on board. And this is our wrap up of episodes 1 through 3 of The Crisis. We'll see you on the other side of the new year for parts 4 and 5. See you.
It is no longer your wife, John Dable. She has been taken by
the anti-monitor.
Murderer! This is for my girls.
Fate of all humanity lies with you now, Pariah.
What can I do?
You will know when the moment arrives. try to stop me, Nobu. No, Mobius. It was foolish to allow your creation in the first place. Goodbye.
Vanishing point. What does that mean?
It's a point outside of time and space.
What happened to the Wave Rider and the others?
The Anti-Monitor. He used Harbinger to attack us. Pariah must have sent us here knowing that the Anti-Monitor couldn't follow.
Well, we have to go back. We have to go back right now!
Barry, we can't. You're gone.
So happy that worked.
Rex, what did you do?
Well, I held the Book of Destiny and I saw you seven paragons due to be stranded at the vanishing point. And I thought Destiny could use a little rewrite. So, what do we do now?
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.